as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, this is the Automatically Deleted Husband. Several things, and I'm going to try to be short. I won't go into detail much. One, I was really surprised Saturday. I went to the farmer's market, visited people, had some delightful conversations, and I was getting close to done, but I was still in some conversation at the parking lot. There was Chris. it's kind of like he showed up, kind of like he called me apparently, didn't get me, so he figured he knew where I would be, and he found me. We had a delightful day Saturday. One of the things we discussed, which I thought was fascinating, because I've heard the discussion so many times before about, because we have discussed in years past about the issue with Adam and the fall, and did Adam need redemption before the fall? Things of that nature. I think basically yes. But the thing that was the focus was, Christ is the mediator between God and man, right? So was Christ the mediator for Adam? And I think the evidence is clear, because again, what is the mediator? Someone who comes in between. In order to, facilitate communications. We cannot talk to God the Father. So we need someone to act as a mediator in between us. That's Jesus Christ, who was walking in the garden during the cool of the day. Who was that Adam talked with face to face? Jesus Christ, his mediator. Anyway, it was a delightful conversation. It was the kind of thing I'd really love to share with my family. I sent the postcard today to Julia because I remember so much. Back in 2007, I took some dates with kids. The one that with Julia is when she did this plate. She did it beautifully, and because I remember sitting watching her there for an hour or so or more as she did that, and it was just, I was marveling. That was my girl. And she was just so intense doing that plate. But the reason I sent her the card is because a month later, approximately, is when I had the date with Susanna, which was July 12th. It was the day of collateral murder. I continue to think about those times and whatnot, because I really it's had an impact. But speaking of war... the collateral murder events really was war. But there was I saw a report. It was done by a reporter from RT. RT reports from town close to LPR frontline. So this is in the Donbass area, and it was a reporter speaking to he went to an area that was bombed by the Ukrainians, and here was a lot of civilians who were talking about the issues they faced from the bombing, because the allegation is Ukraine is losing the Donbass area. So as they're leaving, what they're doing is destroying as much as they can. They're doing the booby traps. It was the HIMARS system that the U.S. has sent. They're using that. They're using the cluster munitions and things of that nature, which naughty boy kind of thing. They're doing a lot of vile things, and of course they blame the Russians for it. It's interesting. I saw a video from Eva Bartlett, who is she actually shows up there. She's American-born, grew up in Canada, and spent a lot of time in Gaza, Syria. She's the one who actually interviewed the boy in the orange chair of many years ago in Syria that made such a sensation. Everybody, ooh, ah, and she went and talked to him and said, nah, it was fake. But anyway, and of course, she's the one that pointed out this mass grave of thousands or tens of thousands of people that the Russians put together. She went to it, and it wasn't. Anyway, but a lot of things. And of course, she's done that in so many places. And that's why she's on the Ukrainian kill list. But You know, and she's pointed out, for example, there was because I saw this originally, there was the hospital in Mariupol that the Ukrainians said was destroyed by Russians, and they did all sorts of vile things. The issue is the hospital was previously evacuated. It was a bunch of PR stuff that was done, and so what they claimed didn't happen. Whereas recently the Ukrainians are indeed bombing hospitals, specifically maternity hospitals in Donbass. And, you know, because I remember seeing one report. Well, Eva Bartlett was one, but there was another reporter I saw who went there and said the issue is, and they showed, for example, the hole in the ceiling, you know, the concrete ceiling. And here's the bomb sitting there, you know, the remains of the back end of it. And the one guy said, you know, my godchild was born here. You know, so it was no longer, he's a reporter, he's a Russian reporter, but, you know, because these people are Russian. And it became personal. But anyway, the point is, this interchange was, they spoke in Russian, and so you have the overlays. This gentleman was talking about how the Ukrainians bombed his home. They said, I think he said, it was like they're bombing like 10 different houses a day and just destroying the place. But what stood out, the reporter asked him about, are you, is this hate? And then he said, will you ever be able to forgive them? And there was a pause. The gentleman had a pause, turned away. And his response, I thought, was fascinating. He said, God will forgive them. And I thought about that because I think in the mind of what kind of attitude would you have with somebody who's done such horrible things to your community, to your family? Can you honestly say, I'm going to love my enemy? And what I saw in this guy, I would suggest, assuming I'm interpreting this correctly, you know, because obviously I can't read his mind or know his heart, but my guess from looking at the expression of his face and the way he turned and so forth on the video, he knew the right answer. He knew he had to forgive them. But it's hard. But he did say, God will forgive them. And I think that's a person who knows grace and also knows our human frailties. I was just fascinated with that. I would suggest there's a good possibility that this man's my brother. You know, obviously I don't know. But just to be able to come with that kind of response, And the temperament I saw, I really wonder about that. It was fascinating to me. And last thing, Saturday indeed, I did start sending emails. I have my email program. I sent it to the Shofar Nexus, which received it and turned around and forwarded it to john@kozlowski.org. And got there. There are a couple of issues because one of the things I don't have in place yet was there are things like there's these SPF signature which is in now, and there's the the domain keys thing which I didn't have in. Which I have to put in, and I'll probably have that in tomorrow because it's coming to me, but it's coming in spam. So I gotta take care of that issue. So, and I was a little clumsy today, so I didn't get that done. But so I am sending email. That was working as of Saturday. But I send an email Sunday to a number of people and said, I want to make this happen. I have three positive responses. That encouraged me. I have three positive responses, including, well, I have three right now. So I'm encouraged. No, excuse me. I have four. My mistake. I have four. One is not a... Well, okay. I have four. I am at the point right now where 10 years ago, over 10 years ago now, my wife abandoned me. And I haven't seen my kids in a decade. I have no hope in front of me. None whatsoever. There's no love shown by my wife. There was some hints, a little bit of love from, like, Julia, the one I sent the card to today. But, you know, Eric Lee showed some positive things, and then, of course, she goes back and forth. I'm really concerned about my Eric Lee because I don't know what's happening with her. Jack obviously has issues. Tirza, well, I don't know. And, of course, the young kids, they don't know me. Except George, who did reach out to me, and I'm sure he knows nothing about my reaching back. And obviously the institutional church shows no interest in reconciliation, either does my father-in-law. So I'm living without any hope offered by people in that area. In a sense, it gives me a license to do things that others wouldn't, because they have things at risk, specifically their family. In a very real sense, I have no risk at all. What can man do to me? Nothing. However, again, it is. I wrote specifically because I was asked by a friend to describe some of the things. So much for being short. I was asked by a friend to describe some things about Shofar Nexus in order for him to write, to explain to others. And so I did, and that's what I ended up sharing with several others myself. I talked about the various things, but, and I guess it's percolating up in my mind. Shofar leaks. Well, I'll read the paragraph. Since the whistleblower has become near and dear to my heart, as I describe myself as a repeat offender, Shofar Leaks was developed in 2012. You can consider it loosely like WikiLeaks, but not an organization. The focus is for those who if exposed, might lose their jobs, Eric Cochran and me, end up in jail, Daniel Hale, John Kiriakou, Bradley or Chelsea Manning, or dead, perhaps Seth Rich or Mike Connell. One of the possibilities is a software version of a dead man's switch. For some people, this could have a significant value to help them keep a pulse or prevent retaliation. Besides the Shofar book things, my next line was the Shofar book, this is where my heart is. Anyway. No, I'm going to read it. This is where my heart is. It started as simply an electronic Bible, which is something I started to play with in the late 1980s. You know, in the 1980s, the idea of having 5 megabytes, a Bible is roughly 5 megabytes of data. To have 5 megabytes in a computer was kind of like, oh, that's a lot of data. Now that's nothing. But back then, so what I did is I went through the process. I had the Bible in electronic form. And I said, okay, let me play with some ideas about how I can compress this. Basically, what it would be was to take each word and turn it into a number, to shrink it down, and that also allowed for searching to be done more quickly, because one of the issues was back then computers were a whole lot slower. So searching is not the thing I wanted to do by examining the text, which is what you would do now. But back then, you had to do things in order to compress things. Anyway, I have an issue right now. Come on, go away. Start. So I did start that project, and it didn't go anywhere. But it was a learning experience. You know, again, a lot of these things set the foundations. Okay. While there are many available, there are two important focuses. One is that besides multiple languages, I plan to include the Quran and perhaps other texts like the Book of Mormon. I do not want to include commentaries, but rather tools to compare the documents. An example I frequently use is that the Quran states, "Do not say three or Trinity," which is Surah 4:171. Rather than trying to convince someone about the statement, the desire is to have the tools to quickly see related passages in the Bible and leave it in the hands of the reader to accept one or the other. The reality is to leave it in the hands of the Lord. You know, and this really has become an important factor, because I'm not trying to beat somebody over the head saying, no, you got it wrong if you believe the Quran, or you got it wrong if you're an atheist, or whatever. No, I want to set it before somebody. And, you know, I've had at least the nuance return. If you put the Quran in there, somebody who's a Christian might go to Islam instead. And you know, when I actually believe when John 6 says that, you know, only who the Father gives will come, and he'll never let him go. So I believe that. If somebody, again, the example is Masharia Hashemi, who grew up in a Christian home in the U.S., could not understand the Trinity, converted to Islam, and she's the reporter in Iran that I did a video on long ago. I think she's wrong, but I do not condemn her. I actually, you know, it was a very supportive video, but that's another issue. So that's the one aspect. The second aspect is, once you load the shofar book on a device, such as a tablet or a used cell phone, all communications is turned off on the device, and no notes or records can be kept. The point is to make sure the user cannot make a mistake where his use of the device can be tracked to him. For some, such as the Muslim in Saudi Arabia, who might have the device and decide it is not the Prophet Jesus, as the Quran describes, but the Lord Jesus Christ, it might cause difficulties, as being part of the weekly beheadings. Most uncomfortable, at least for a moment. The issue with this is that there's not a dime to be made from it. So again, I got to find somebody with a heart for that. But I went on. There's yet another aspect that is more local, in the sense that so many now use a Bible on their phone. What that means is that when and where you use the Bible is tracked. While there's a lot of arguments from both sides in the recent 2000 Mules video about the 2020 election, don't miss the blatant. People were tracked by their cell phones. This includes where they were and when. To varying degrees, your phone is also listening to you 24 hours a day. You probably have the ability on your phone to see what application is using the battery, such as perhaps your Bible program. You don't have to be individually targeted, but collectively, those that use a Bible program can be programmatically found. Then it becomes easy to find when those programs are being used at the same time by a repeated set of people. You have found some form of Bible study or worship. Those that do not have the program but do have a phone and are also within the group are also tagged. Does that cause issues? Consider the social credit scores in China or Sesame credits. If your score is high, you get benefits. If it is low, life is a bit more difficult. Too low, and you can find, and you can no longer travel in the country, and you might be high in the list for organ harvesting, which is only a few tens of thousands a year. So no real concern, right? Will we see a U.S. version of the same? Will we be like Canada that seized bank accounts of the truckers involved in the protest earlier this year? Will we find it difficult to find income? Will family and friends be encouraged to distance themselves, as we're too much of a risk? Perhaps most dangerous of all, will we self-censor? And that I really think that is one of the fundamental issues, the self-censorship. You know, it's kind of like, oh, people are coming against me. You know, then I have something that I can say, oh, I can be brave. But if I simply say, I don't have to be brave, if I simply well, then I'll read the close. This is a semi-brief description of the hope and purpose of the show for Nexus. For me, it is not a goal to make a lot of money, but an act of love. I want to open the door to private communications. The distraction is someone evil might use it. Yes, that is true. The government or the banking community might use it. But again, where is your trust? Again, somebody evil, the government, the banking community. That's the point there. The next John Kiriakou, who is in prison for exposing that the U.S. government tortures by policy, which continues, or Daniel Hale, who pointed out that most of the targets of U.S. drones are civilians and children, and is in prison today, might have a chance to stay free and unknown, while to whatever degree making their conscience clear are arguably following Ephesians 5:11. You know, do not be part of the works of darkness, but expose them. My heart's desire is to put this into the hands of a Muslim, perhaps not yet born, who will find the fallacy of his faith and instead embrace the Lord while still surrounded by the staunch Muslim community. May the Lord grant them. One other thing, because one person mentioned this. Last paragraph. I have been long fascinated with the rendering of the Old Testament of strong and courageous. In the Greek, it is andrizomai, which we see once in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 16:13. Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong, let all that you do be done in love. Being courageous and acting like a man are the same. In our feminized culture, it is hard to find a courageous man. If you know one, share this with them and have them contact me, please. And let all that you do be done in love. You know, I've expressed that repeatedly, especially when I've done some of the videos or voicemails to my sons. Be watchful. Stand firm in the faith. Act like men. Be strong. Let all that you do be done in love. It's not be strong and I'm going to beat you up. It's not act like men, I'm macho. It's doing things in love. That's vital. I'm a man that lives with no hope offered for a reconciled family. I'm going to unwaveringly pursue it. I'm a man who is having some difficulties in a number of areas. In the past, I would have been more panicked. I'm not. I am going to pursue. I mean, there is no turning back anymore. You know, put your hand to the plow on turning back? No, there's no turning back. I had for 8 years rapid onsite. It's gone. It's been removed from my software development efforts. This is the focus. There's no turning back. Lord willing, till my last breath, this is the focus. Unless, of course, reconciliation with my family comes, especially my wife. This is the focus. And my hope and prayer is for that Muslim guy in Saudi Arabia. Again, he may not be born yet. I want to do this for him. And the other idea. The next John Kiriakou, Daniel Hale. I want to keep him out of prison. My lady, my wife, I love you and I want you back.